across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Friday morning, July 12th, 2024. And it's another beautiful day to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening, across the Civic Media Radio Network, through the app, social media, or podcast. It is a beautiful day, but admittedly, a little bit of a hazy day. It appears that Canada went and caught fire again, and a wildfire smoke is again making the sunsets remarkably beautiful and deep red, but the air itself is getting a little hazy, and some folks are going to keep that air conditioner on and the windows closed all day because the air just isn't as fresh as it could be, shall we say. I got a question for you. Hot air balloons, yay or nay? Where do you come down in this? We're going to Greg Bach right away to weigh in on this very hefty matter, because I was driving out to the Twin Cities yesterday, taking one of our daughters back to the airport and ending our three-week-long stint of traveling to see daughters and daughters traveling to see us. And as I'm coming across the bridge to Hudson and Stillwater, just this beautiful sight of these hot air balloons at, you know, rising up over the St. Croix River. And I've seen that before, and it's gorgeous. But I will never, ever get into one, Greg. I will never get into a hot air balloon. It makes no sense. Good morning. And as Todd Alba likes to say, what say you?
I say, when it comes, it's weird you bring it up, because I was driving this week, and when I come to the studio here in Waukesha at WAUK, I drive along like back county roads to get here. And I'm just driving, and all of a sudden I'm like, there's a hot air balloon being inflated. That's something I've never seen in my entire life. I've seen hot air balloons flying, but not the process. And I just thought to myself, yay for they, none for may. There's something about, like, I don't deny the beauty. I don't deny probably the awesome view you get. And if you like that, do your thing, Jelly Bean. But that's just one I'm like, hot pass.
No, I have seen one too many videos of the mishaps. And you are just helpless.
Yeah.
You're just helpless there. And I'm not really crazy about that, but it's beautiful. And we were coming down the hill into the river valley. And so there's these trees, and this balloon is coming up like almost right in front of us, just off to the left of us. And so close and so big, coming, you know, over the tree cover, that you thought you were in a video game. Like, it, you know, in Mario Brothers or something, where, you know, this big old colorful balloon is popping up right in front of you, you know. And then you notice a few more up and down the river, and it's a gorgeous sight. I'm glad other people do it, because I get to enjoy the beauty of it.
Yeah, exactly. I love the designs on there. They're really cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no. Mm-mm. I feel helpless enough in a plane that's being flown by, you know, seasoned experts.
Uh-huh.
No.
Not to mention, 2 hours trapped in a booth with, you know, an inexperienced radio show host who could take this thing crashing to the ground at any time. I mean, you have a leap of faith every morning, and I appreciate that. So, you know, maybe, just maybe, somebody has a counterpoint to that and says, look, you gutless wonders, get in there. Here's the number to call to tell us that we're gutless wonders, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC, or text it, or use the Civic Media app, or put a comment on Facebook or YouTube, where you can find the video version of this here radio show. And we'd love to hear from you this morning. Here's what else is coming up. Kiev Akil is off this week, our national correspondent, who's normally out in California. But I've got plenty of folks ready to step up, including two of my colleagues from our North Carolina sister outlet for Courier Newsroom, the Cardinal and Pine. Why, you ask? Well, because on the eve of the national convention in Milwaukee, there are Republicans who are no longer even trying to hide their extremism and their, frankly, contempt for a civil society. And that includes the candidate for governor in North Carolina telling a church audience how he thinks, quote, some folks need killing, and then goes on to describe basically progressives and is all but advocating civil war. Again, the Republican candidate for governor in North Carolina. So I actually talked to two of my colleagues there, Billy Ball, who's one of the senior editors, and then we'll talk to Michael McElroy, We'll talk to him fresh from covering a visit by Vice President Kamala Harris to North Carolina yesterday. We'll talk about her advocacy for President Biden and, of course, the speculation that if the president were to decide to not run for re-election after all, what the vice president has to say about that and, you know, again, how she would be received by Democratic voters, those who would greatly support her and those who instead would work to undermine her. Meanwhile, the president did hold an impromptu news conference Thursday evening to answer questions about his health and his re-election campaign. But given what can only be called the feeding frenzy of media speculation, I wouldn't even call it speculation. I would call it outright lobbying for him to leave the race. We thought maybe we would cover the coverage of the news conference. And that, of course, is what we have Mark Jacob for. And so he will be here in our next hour to talk about some of the latest happenings on the presidential campaign front and why so much attention is being focused on that versus the human gaffe machine, the convicted felon who met yesterday with the dictatorial prime minister of an Eastern European country shortly after that dictatorial prime minister visited both Russia and China, shortly after Russia's dictator visited North Korea. It's almost like we have our own little axis of evil that stretches right to Florida, and it is a true threat to national security. We'll get into that as well. Brittany Merlot has our weekend forecast, and the Brewers were no hit yesterday. Not officially, but it certainly felt a lot like it, and it ended a winning streak that they had of a series at American Family Field. Details coming up on all of that in just a bit. A busy week next week, of course. We've got the Republican National Convention taking place, and Civic Media will have special coverage every evening at 7 p.m. You'll have Civic Media News Director Terry Bell and his team covering stories that come out of the Fiserv Forum and the surrounding area. You also have Todd Alba with his noon to 2 o'clock afternoon show from inside the convention area as well. He's actually going to be there today for his show to help preview the Republican convention. Roger writes on Facebook, hot air balloons, watch yes, ride no. So there you go. We have three no's on riding the hot air balloon. So next week, we're going to have our own extended coverage of the Republican convention, including a couple of folks from the Lincoln Project. They would include longtime political strategists, Rick Wilson from the Republican side, Joe Trippi from the Democratic side. We'll talk to our friend Scott Ross, formerly of One Wisconsin Now. We'll also talk to Deborah Kronmiller from the League of Women Voters, and we will again get into the constitutional amendments that will be on the Wisconsin ballot on August 13th. And again, August 13th is normally a sleepy primary, but there are these state constitutional questions on there that make it worth your while to show up, even if it's for that alone, even if there are no other primaries on your ballot. To learn more about how you can vote on August 13th or vote absentee ahead of time, head over to myvote.wi.gov. Again, myvote.wi.gov to learn all about the August 13th primary election. We'll unpack some of the news as well here. Obviously, when it comes to the Republican convention being held in Milwaukee, we already mentioned a couple of weeks back Joe Pecky's very excellent point of if Wisconsin is such a swing state, and it is, why isn't Ron Johnson in the mix for discussion about Trump's vice presidential nominee? I mean, we saw how important it was that Paul Ryan be a pick some years back. And there certainly are other Republicans that, you know, Trump could be looking at, but he's not. But Senator Johnson will be expected to speak at the Republican convention, as will human rake stepper Eric Hovde. And we'll see what he has to say in his efforts to try to get the delegates fired up and see what exactly, you know, falls out of him in his remarks in his upcoming race against Senator Tammy Baldwin. So we don't have the exact speaking schedule here in front of us yet. We know that Ron Johnson spoke at the Republican convention in 2016 in Cleveland when he was running for a second term in the Senate. It was a speech focused on national security and attacking Russ Feingold and attacking the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Not aware that Eric Hovde has any public speaking record other than all of the talk radio shows that he's been doing, the audio snippets of which continue to be the gift that keeps on giving if you're at least in the Tammy Baldwin campaign. We also wanted to give credit to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and others who have been taking on some of the speculation about President Biden and, for example, the point that, you know, it's too late to replace Joe Biden on the ballot. And that's not true. It's not true. There's a PolitiFact story all about that because, again, it comes to a misunderstanding of how the ballots are determined for presidential contests in Wisconsin. And for national political parties, their deadline to put a candidate on the Wisconsin ballot is September 3rd. The parties already have slots on the presidential ballot, but of course, they don't even have nominees yet. They haven't held the conventions. So they hold the conventions, they make a nominee, and then they have until September 3rd. So anybody telling you that it's already a done deal in terms of the Wisconsin ballot is incorrect there. Now, of course, there probably doesn't need to be any changes, and President Biden certainly proved that yesterday in his news conference. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And on the Republican side, again, unless there's some kind of great awakening by Republicans within the next couple of days, a convicted felon will be their nominee next week in Milwaukee. Sports at 6:18, Pittsburgh rookie pitcher Paul Skeens threw a no-hitter against the Brewers last night, threw seven innings, and then he was pulled after 99 pitches. The Pirates were only ahead 1-0 at that point, but the lead did hold up as Milwaukee was unable to capitalize on Skeens being out of the game. For Skeens, this is only his 11th major league start, but he struck out 11 yesterday, only one walk, one hit batsman. He lowered his ERA to 1.90. He was the number one overall pick in last year's draft out of LSU, and he has permitted two or fewer runs in nine of his 11 major league starts. Milwaukee wasted a great performance by pitcher Aaron Civale. So Freddie Peralta will get the start tonight as the Washington Nationals come to town ahead of next week's All-Star game. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Friday morning, when you're here, you're up north. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll be right back. Well, yeah, of course we've got to do a little Yacht Rock on this Friday morning, July 12th, and Dr. Hook was our choice for today. Little sexy eyes. How did you put it, Greg?
If you saw Dr. Hook, you'd be wondering why isn't the song called Sexy Eye?
I see what you did there, yeah.
When you look at Dr. Hook, this record cover too, you don't expect this music.
What do you expect?
I expect, like, you know, hey, I was a roadie for Lynyrd Skynyrd, and I got a dirtier version of their music.
No, it's not like that at all, but that wasn't what the record companies were looking for back then.
No way.
You know? They're looking for it to be smooth.
Smooth.
Somehow we managed to raise the bar yet again.
Yeah.
What this genre ought to be. Are we continuing our coffee cup Friday? Because I haven't dug out much for new coffee cups. I've got another one of the photo mugs with all the kids and the grandkids on mine.
I have my Roy Kent mug again, so I apologize. I dropped the ball. Get it?
Yeah, I see that, what you did there, Roy. He's got his whistle t-shirt on today again. At some point, we're going to have to move on from Roy Kent and Ted Lasso and the rest. But
yeah, I got to find your coffee cups at home. That's the thing, is we have a ton of them, and they're just like eight.
I have a ton in the basement,
yes.
You know, and I've just got the same few in rotation. And like, the whole reason we invented Coffee Cup Friday was that we would go digging through our stash and showing these things off. Or as I've now referred to things, as I try to declutter the house. touch it one more time, look at it, going, oh, this is nice, and then chuck it.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, I don't need 44 coffee mugs anymore.
No.
You know, they were fun to collect along the way. Like, oh, here's one from the Black Hills, and here's one from here. I'm not going to use this again.
Go to the TV station you used to work at and be like, here, I got a present for you. Put these in the cafeteria.
Yeah. Well, we are, you know, going to be finally fixing this home office back here, here in what we like to call our Lake Wissota studio, which has this kind of yellowy beigeous paint behind me, which kind of makes my face look even redder. It's got some family photos back here. And we've been talking for the longest time about painting the wall and or putting up, you know, bookshelves or some kind of a shelving thing behind there. Maybe part of it is dedicated to just, you know, having a whole bunch of coffee mugs back there.
Ooh. And
we just rotate it through.
I like that.
You know, it's a morning show, coffee mugs. Maybe that's it.
You can fill them with like sound conditioning pieces, and then it can also double as like, even though you sound great.
Say like jelly beans or M&Ms or something like that, but whatever works, right? Whatever deafens the sound. At some point, somebody's saying, I tuned in for news and I'm getting interior decorating ideas, but that's...
And now that's on to sports. Let's talk about...
No, people will delete their apps. No, we must not.
You baby.
Come on. There was an anniversary that was marked last week during the holiday week. It was the one-year anniversary of Governor Tony Evers signing the state budget. All right? That's as both important and as boring as it gets for coverage of state government, okay? For a state to run, it needs a budget. You know, how much is going to education? How much is going to the DNR? How much is going to all of these various important functions around the state? But it's also very boring to cover. And yet, we're mentioning it today, a year later, for this reason. It now means that for a year, since the state budget was signed, since the state budget was passed by the Republican legislature and signed by a Democratic governor, for a year, Republican legislators have refused to release something like $200 million in various parts of the budget and that should have been released to address problems. They include the PFAS contamination that we've talked about before. That's $125 million right there, $50 million to help fund a brand new mandate for schools to change their reading and literacy programs. There was support for child care providers. That money's been bottled up. In total, Governor Evers noted yesterday and in his weekend radio address that more than $200 million worth of investments is sitting in Madison that could be going out the door to help people and to help communities, and Republicans are simply choosing not to. You know, these are the same folks, the governor notes, who earned this headline: least active full-time legislature in America during the coronavirus pandemic. In other words, this is a legislature, this is a group of people who don't want to work, who are allergic to work, who you pay more than $50,000 a year to every one of them. And they feel like their job is to say no to things. Well, first to say yes, to say, oh, we care about this problem. Here, we'll pass this budget that allocates this money for it. And then do the legislative equivalent of saying psych, and then just sitting on the money as the water is still contaminated in the state. Now, of course, it's not just to sit on the money. It's to play games with the money, to, as we've mentioned before, to say, well, we'll release it if the governor caves into our demand that the companies that polluted our water, you know, not be held as accountable. You know, if the DNR cleans it up, then the DNR shouldn't have to go after them, which means that you, the taxpayer, have to clean it up instead of going to the company, taking them to court and saying, hey, you dumped all this, you know, firefighting foam or all these other industrial chemicals along the way. Maybe you didn't know at the time that it was hazardous, but we know it now and you did it, so you should kick in to help clean this up. And somehow Republicans are blocking that and continuing to hold on to the ridiculous line that, well, you know, innocent landowners might have to pay for the cleanup otherwise. when there's nothing in the law that indicates that that would be true. It's purely a favor to Wisconsin manufacturers and commerce and big businesses all around the state. And they should be getting far more pressure from their constituents back home for holding on to money meant to clean up drinking water in Wisconsin. That and all of these other programs that I mentioned, it's now been a year that Republicans have sat on this money and decided we don't really feel like working for you, the taxpayer. We feel like playing these political games for our business friends, and we'll continue to do so, you know, because we can get away with it, at least until November's election, when we finally have some new maps. What else are legislators doing? Well, they're blocking what should be routine rules on things about professional licenses. I was trying to say licenses or licensing. Lawmakers are voting to block a licensing rule for eye doctors, in part because diversity is mentioned in there. In the rule that is being considered, it says optometrists must have 30 hours of approved continuing education every 2 years. It would allow but not require 1 hour of cultural competency or diversity training as part of that 30. Now, part of the reason you would do that is that, as mentioned by one state official, if you learn about the cultures, traditions, and ancestry of patients, it's vital to identifying patients who are at risk or suffering from genetic disorders, or identifying potential underlying causes to make treatment decisions. That is the expert and scientific reason you would do this. But simply because it mentions diversity, which is a code word to a certain type of person out there, that rule is now being blocked by Republican legislators. Hopefully the optometrists and others know the value of taking these courses just the same. All right, we'll talk to our friends at the North Carolina Cardinal and Pine about divisive and violent rhetoric next. You're up north.
In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina.
All right, Kia Vakil is off this week, and so I turn to a couple of my Courier Newsroom colleagues from the Cardinal and Pine. That's the name of the outlet, our sister outlet for North Carolina. And we're going to talk live in a moment with Michael McElroy, who covered an event from Vice President Kamala Harris visiting there yesterday. But first, I got to start with Billy Ball covering Mark Robinson, the Republican nominee for governor for North Carolina. He is a conspiracy theorist. He's had plenty of hateful things to say before. But to use the phrase, some folks need killing, give a listen for yourself.
You know, it was a time when we used to meet evil on the battlefield, and guess what we did to it? We killed it. We didn't quibble about it. We didn't argue about it. We didn't fight about it. We killed it. Some folks need killing. Some liberal somewhere is going to say that sounds awful. Too bad. It's time for somebody to say it. It's not a matter of vengeance. It's not a matter of being mean or spiteful. It's a matter of necessity.
Well, so there you go. That's Mark Robinson, and with more about it is my colleague over at the Cardinal and Pine in North Carolina, Billy Ball. Billy, hello. How are you?
Happy to be here. Hope you're doing all right.
You know, we're all doing. we all have strange things going on in our respective states. Ours are mostly humorous, with professional rake stepper Eric Hovde always managing to say something weird and wrong, but at no point has he espoused violent rhetoric. This guy Mark Robinson, this is something we don't have much up here. I don't know how outside the mainstream it is in North Carolina, but how are you all taking in these remarks?
You know, it's outside of the modern mainstream in North Carolina. North Carolina has a history of some pretty angry, offensive, vitriolic sort of candidates. But those candidates are from a long time ago. It's worth mentioning that Mark Robinson, one of the most significant differences between him and those candidates I'm referring to, which was around the start of the 1900s, which is when you had those white supremacy campaigns. That's when you had mm-hmm. like some of the most bitterly angry campaigning, you'll see Mark Robinson's a black man. So it changes the story, but the words that he's been saying are, in my 20 years of covering North Carolina politics, as extreme, as angry as I've ever seen, referring to LGBTQ people as filth, referring to them multiple times with the connotation that they're evil, demonic. He has, on a number of occasions, referred to abortion providers as butchers, called it genocide. He's as far right as you get, and he has made a political persona that, in my opinion, makes him maybe the most extreme governor's candidate in America.
I could certainly see where that would be true. And the other interesting thing here in his speaking as a black candidate is the way that he invokes something we're used to hearing from much more traditionally racist campaigns, and that's the whole notion of heritage. He talks about how 1776 is a distant memory. Well, things were a lot different for a black man in 1776. But more importantly, he's talking about the changes in life, and he says, quote, "We have forgotten who we are." And again, when you're so wrapped up in looking backward through an arguably distorted lens instead of looking toward the future, it sure seems to me like your only appeal is to this false nostalgia, fear, and then turn that into anger. That seems to be what Robinson's calling card is.
I think so. We really shouldn't be, honestly, that surprised for folks who are in North Carolina. Robinson's political star started to rise because of a viral video when he spoke at a Greensboro, North Carolina City Council meeting about gun rights. And the video got picked up. He's an extraordinarily charismatic speaker. It's probably the greatest attribute he has. And that video got picked up. It got run by lots of conservative circles. And then he ran for lieutenant governor in the state. And it's kind of been up from there. And then, of course, the next step was the governor's race. But you're absolutely right that Robinson echoes some of the Trumpian types of things about looking back. We have lost ourselves. It all depends on who we are and what time he's talking about. And I think that it is worth saying that, of course, Robinson is a historic candidate as a black man running for governor. If he won, he would be the first black governor in North Carolina history. But at the same time, I think there was some beliefs or assumptions among Republicans that would translate to more black people voting him. Polling numbers on this show that he's not really doing any better than other Republicans. And I think it speaks to the fact that I hate that this needs to be said out loud, but Republicans tend to think that black voters are just going to fall in line because of the color of his skin. And a number of the black leaders I've talked to in North Carolina about this have said on multiple occasions that's an extraordinarily offensive assumption.
Right, because he's basically just catering to a hateful block of the electorate, and it's the same block, no matter your skin color. Hate is hate, but it's not much better with your nominee to lead the public schools there, Michelle Morrow. Let's see, we've called public schools indoctrination centers and calling for the assassination of prominent Democrats. So you got some angry people there, Billy.
We do. Maybe it's the heat. It's really hot.
Maybe. Well, maybe they should take the climate change more seriously as well. I don't know. Let's get to some positive news out of your state. And we've talked to your colleagues previously about this. One of the more recent states to expand Medicaid with Republican support. And once that became available, I'm assuming that turnout and enrollment and everything is still at a intended pun healthy number.
Yes. At one point this spring, I know that the enrollment had exceeded 400,000 people. WRAL's reporting referred to it as a, quote, breakneck pace. It has been very fast. It's been on the ground for about a year. And I think it speaks to the fact that people in North Carolina have been waiting on Medicaid expansion for about a decade or more. This is, you know, Medicaid expansion is an idea that came about when Obama was president. That's how long we've been talking about Medicaid expansion. And it had been delayed for a number of years, opposition in the Republican Party. But I do think that the Republicans started to move because I think they were probably hearing from their constituents, especially in rural areas who were struggling to get access to affordable health care. Plus, they were seeing their rural hospitals were really struggling trying to make ends meet. So Medicaid expansion for those hospitals in particular and those rural areas is huge because most of North Carolina is rural. It's a big deal.
And hopefully more folks in Wisconsin will take notice of this and carry it over. Billy Ball from the Cardinal and Pine, cardinalpine.com, if you want to read more about what he and his team are doing in North Carolina. Billy, appreciate your time so much. Have a great weekend.
I'm happy to have been here. Thanks so much, Pat.
And we're now joined by Michael McElroy, another one of Billy's colleagues at Cardinal Pine, cardinalpine.com. Michael, you were at the event yesterday with Vice President Kamala Harris. Thanks for being here. How are you?
I'm great, and thanks for having me. And yes, I was.
So we obviously there's been much more attention on her thanks to the the wild new rounds of speculation in national media and frankly from some Democratic circles as well. Did it? From what we have seen of the vice president, was there anything different? Was it a fairly traditional campaign rally? How much of a nod was there to the current controversy? Did you talk to people in the crowd who had somehow changed their point of view on President Biden?
It was very much a kind of standard campaign rally, Vice President Harris nodded to it kind of obliquely by saying simply that Joe Biden has, knows how to get up after being knocked down and is a fighter, that kind of language, but didn't address it directly. And it was even less directly than President Biden himself addressed it in his post-debate rally in Raleigh, North Carolina, whenever it was 2 weeks ago. He mentioned, I don't debate as well as I used to, but I know how to tell the truth and I know how to fight and all these things, the common theme. But I will say the thing that struck me the most is those conversations with people in the crowd. The crowd in the Biden rally was super enthusiastic about him. The crowd in the Harris rally was super enthusiastic about him. Every time she mentioned his name, the crowd cheered. And these were pretty sizable crowds. But the people I did talk to, they supported the president. And but the biggest issue was even those who had concerns about his age or his debate performance, they were nowhere near as large as the concerns in the crowd over the idea of a second Trump administration. They care very much about issues in North Carolina, the crowd. And so they cared far more about threats to democracy. They cared far more about climate change policies, of which the Biden and Trump administrations would be completely different. They cared far more about healthcare, also completely different. They cared far more about reproductive rights. Again, completely different among the administration. So yes, the narrative nationally about infighting among Democrats over the Biden issue, that was not in the crowd that I saw.
Now, you have done reporting on this previously, and if folks head over to cardinalpine.com, they'll find a link to a video that you did all about what Trump and Project 2025 could mean for North Carolina. And in Greensboro, Vice President Harris, again, hit on those themes that we're talking about a big difference between the performance of one man versus what an entire party and candidate stands for, which clearly it sounds like that audience gets the distinction.
Yeah, absolutely. There have been, obviously, there's been some Democrats who have been expressed concerns or have outright called for Biden to step down. But the biggest Democrats in North Carolina have not been among them. Roy Cooper, a Democrat, has fully supported the president. Josh Stein, a Democrat who is the attorney general who is running for governor against Mark Robinson, who you mentioned earlier with Billy, has fully supported the president. So Democrats in North Carolina, at least, have not been calling for Biden to step down. And the distinction between the two administrations and candidacies just couldn't be starker.
And then one thing, getting back to the vice president's visit to North Carolina, you know, we are familiar with the outreach that she's been doing. She's made multiple trips here to Wisconsin as well. One of her more recent visits talked about, again, the uplifting of communities of color, the investments in small business, things like that. She recently was part of a kickoff for outreach to Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander communities, and that includes here in Wisconsin and elsewhere. So in talking to that, you know, as you said, mostly Black audience or more so than Asian American there, did you see that same kind of message about the Biden administration's record for communities of color and marginalized communities?
Most certainly. And the record, even if Harris hadn't mentioned the record, a lot of the people in the crowd mentioned it to me. As Billy was talking about rural communities, you know, North Carolina is one of the largest rural populations in the state. And of that rural population, much of it is people of color. And so a lot of the things that the Biden administration has done for these communities affects people of color in those communities. And one of the biggest is broadband. You know, North Carolina has as many internet broadband deserts as any state in the country. And the Biden administration's funding, along with Governor Roy Cooper, have been pushing out and getting broadband a little bit at a time to these communities. So it's been a big deal.
It's all about impact, the impact of the Biden-Harris administration and the impact of Trump and Project 2025. So much to learn from our friends in North Carolina. Michael McElroy, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Pat.
Have a great weekend. And when we come back, we'll have today's history lesson and then your weekend forecast not far after that from Brittany Merlot next. You're up north. Carolina in my mind. This, of course, would be the original from the Beach Boys, released this day in 1965. Though, I mean, I'm not going to diss on David Lee Roth and the Van Halen version of it. That was a fun little romp through the old Beach Boys classic back in the 1980s.
Correction, sir. That was David Lee Roth, a solo.
Oh, was that solo?
Yeah, that was after he said, you know what, I'll leave the biggest rock band in America right now. I'll be fine.
And he was for about an hour and a half.
Yeah, exactly.
And hopefully he hasn't spent all the money. So.
No.
So that was released this day in 1965. This day in 1969, the supergroup Blind Faith, which included Eric Clapton and Stevie Winwood, began their U.S. tour with a show at Madison Square Garden. Their album hadn't even been released yet, but the show was still a sellout thanks to Eric Clapton's star power. Birthdays today include Walter Egan. He is 76 years old today, and this was his biggest hit. This would be Magnet and Steel. Now I told you, so you ought to know. Again, Walter Egan, 76 today, native of Queens in New York City. Robin Wilson, lead singer of the Gin Blossoms, is 59. And yes, I did the math this time. It's 59, not 49. It's going to haunt me for the longest time yet. Essayist, poet, philosopher Henry David Thoreau was born this day in 1817. Which would make him 207 years old. I did the math on that. And finally, on birthdays, Richard Simmons is 76 years old today, same as Walter Egan. Richard Simmons, who, again, if I didn't have this habit of watching TMZ at the end of the day just to turn my brain off, just give me mushy celebrity news, mm-hmm. If I didn't watch that, I wouldn't know the first thing about all the drama about Richard Simmons. But because I watch it, I know that there's still all this concern that he's like somehow been brainwashed or is in a cult or not a cult, but somehow or another, he's been isolated, and he insists it's by his own accord that this once very extroverted person is now so private that people are worried about his welfare. I'm not one of them. Live, you know, go get whatever. But the fact that it's still mentioned in some of these celebrity shows, maybe should concern me that he's okay. But
maybe you should be concerned about all people's concern. Like,
yeah, that's it. I just hope he gets birthday cake. He's 76 years old today.
There you go.
So good on you. Also, a birthday today. This would have been the 79th birthday. For, 81.
81st.
Math is hard this week. For the late Christine McVie of Fleetwood Mac. You lifted me up. It's just surreal to think that she's been gone now for over a year and a half since passing away in November of 2022. Somewhat related to this is that on this day in 1970, in Santa Clara County, California, a band called Fritz opened up for Janis Joplin. The lead singer in Fritz is Stevie Nicks, who is awestruck watching Janis Joplin perform. And so Stevie Nicks credits Janis Joplin for showing her how to connect with an audience from the stage. And of course, Stevie Nicks and Christine McVie would later go on and create the legend that did become Fleetwood Mac, which started as a completely different band. Yep. It was almost kind of like folk rock, rocky.
It was a blues rock band.
Blues rock.
It's part of that tradition of the late 60s of English blues bands.
Yeah. And they end up picking up... did they pick up Stevie Nicks and her boyfriend Lindsey Buckingham came along for the ride, or was it vice versa?
I believe it was Lindsey Buckingham who said, Stevie is my partner in life and in music, and if you want me, you want her. And yeah, I mean,
that worked out well for them.
For
the group.
Their lineup changes could be a documentary.
Not so well for Lindsey Buckingham, who was finally fired once and for all from the group a couple of years back.
My goodness.
On this day in 1969, the number one song was a bleak sci-fi song on the eve of man landing on the moon for the first time. In the year 35, ain't gonna need to Zager and Evans was the name of the duo, releasing in the year 2525. It would stay at number one for 6 weeks.
What?
During a period when Apollo 11 landed on the moon.
Well, you know, if we're talking about space anthems, I want a little more. I want more communicative, more community. I want more, you know, positivity. We're inviting them here. We're inviting them here.
By all means. And then Karen Carpenter was lifted into space and never seen again.
It's terrible.
2 years later, 1971, a Coca-Cola radio commercial started running with this song.
I like to teach the world to sing.
Sing with me.
Perfect harmony.
Perfect harmony.
I like to ride the world and keep it company.
The song by The New Seekers was later used in a TV commercial showing young people from around the world singing on a hillside. And then they'd later release a full version of the song, which became a huge radio hit. Again, all these young people, hippies and other aspirants from the baby boom generation, coming together in peace and love. And 10 years later, they'd all vote for Ronald Reagan and things would go to hell from that point onward. But anyway, I digress.
They're all like, I'm colorblind. I'm not racist. I was in the Coke commercial.
Yeah. This day in 1979, Disco Demolition Night at Comiskey Park went horribly wrong.
Yeah.
The plan was to blow up a bunch of disco albums between games of a White Sox-Tigers doubleheader, but the explosion damaged the field, fans rushed the grounds, the White Sox had to forfeit the second game of the doubleheader. On this day in 2004 is when we first heard of the group Sugarland with this debut single.
Love you more than anything in the world. Love
That song, Baby Girl, went all the way to number two on the country charts and stayed on the charts for 46 weeks. And again, things working out all right for Sugarland ever since then. And finally, this is Medal of Honor Day. The Medal of Honor was authorized by the U.S. Congress this day in 1862, the highest military decoration. Medal of Honor Day is actually in March to reflect the 1862 date when the medals were first awarded. We'll pause here for news, and when we come back, we will have former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. We will have Mark Jacob, Dan Schumacher, your weekend forecast, and more on Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.